Should you get married? Obviously, everyone's circumstances and opportunities are different, and the decision whether or not to get hitched is personal and emotional, as well as legal and financial. But Brad Wilcox argues the social case for the institution in the new book, Get Married: Why Americans Must Defy the Elites, Forge Strong Families, and Save Civilization. Brad is a professor of sociology and the director of the National Marriage Project at the University of Virginia. He's the Future of Freedom Fellow at the Institute for Family Studies and a non-resident senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Here he is to share five of his big ideas.
My name is Brad Wilcox, and I'm professor of sociology and director of the National Marriage Project at the University of Virginia. I'm also a fellow at the Institute for Family Studies and the American Enterprise Institute. In my work, I study the quality and stability of marriage and the impact of strong and stable marriages upon men, women, children, and the country at large. I'm going to share five key insights from my book, Get Married. My first insight's about mammon versus marriage. Our culture is increasingly sending us the message that money, work, and freedom and family are the recipe for a prosperous and happy life today. I call this the Midas mindset. Many left-leaning mainstream organs of opinion make this argument with women in mind. One prominent financial outlet ran with this headline, quote, "Women who stay single and don't have kids are getting richer," unquote. Another big left-leaning outlet offered this headline, quote, "The case against marriage," unquote. Meanwhile, now on the right, we're seeing prominent online influencers like Pearl Davis and Andrew Tate also pushing the Midas mindset, but with a focus on men. They argue marriage is a bad deal for guys. In Tate's words, quote, "The problem is there's zero advantage to marriage in the Western world for a man, especially because it's, quote, very common that women," unquote, "divorce their husbands." So from his perspective, any man in his right mind ought to stay single, make lots of money, and use, but not invest in, the opposite sex. Messaging like this helps explain why today more Americans think that education, work, money are more important for fulfillment than marriage, and why the marriage rate has fallen more than 60% in the last 50 years. But this messaging about marriage and family could not be more wrong. That's because nothing predicts happiness in America like a good marriage, not education, not work, not money, and not even sex. The data tell us that men and women who are in a good marriage are 545% more likely to be very happy with their lives compared to their fellow Americans who are unmarried or are in an unhappy marriage. What's more, no group of American men and women are happier than those who are married mothers and married fathers today. So in the real world, marriage matters more than mammon when it comes to endowing our lives with meaning, purpose, and happiness. My second insight is about why marriage matters. So why does marriage matter so much? Well, we're, as Aristotle taught us, social animals. We're hardwired to connect. That's why our ties with others, family and friends, for instance, end up being so much more crucial to our welfare than things like the size of our bank account or the degree on our wall. And because for most of us, no relationship is as important as our marriage, that's also why nothing compares to a good relationship, a good marriage, when it comes to giving us a shot at being happy most of the time. But of course, marriage is not just about happiness. Marriage is also about money. It's about meaning. It's about being less likely to feel alone. We know, for instance, that men and women who get and stay married earn more and save more. And that's why men and women have about 10 times the assets as their peers who are single in their 50s as they're heading towards retirement. They're also significantly less likely to be poor across the course of their lives. Married men and women with children also report much more meaning and significantly less loneliness than their peers who are single and childless. They are more than 50% more likely to report that their lives are meaningful, for instance. So you should be careful in giving much credence to a lot of mainstream media outlets that underline the value of staying single and childless. Consider, for instance, one 30-something man from the outer suburbs of Washington, D.C., who I will call Scott. By the standards of success in today's culture, nothing should bother Scott, who's 34 and unmarried. He's got a college degree from Clemson, an engaging career as a military contractor, and a house of his own, plus a six-figure salary. But these educational and professional accomplishments are not enough. Quote, "You know, I've got degrees on my wall, I've got accomplishments and certificates, but it doesn't mean anything in the end," he told me. Scott feels alone and at sea on many a day. Quote, "I have to get up every day and look in the mirror and realize I'm alone. I have nobody." Not surprisingly, Scott is struggling with a toxic mix of loneliness, meaninglessness, and sadness. Of course, all of us know single people who are thriving and married men and women who are struggling. But on average, the meaning, direction, and sense of solidarity supplied by marriage is invaluable to ordinary men and women today. My third insight questions whether or not marriage is a bad bet. You know, many Americans today worry that marriage is a bad bet, partly because they think that one in two marriages today end in divorce. But that statistic is no longer relevant, no longer true. The divorce rate has fallen 40% since 1980, which means that most marriages today go the distance. This also means that most kids born to married parents today will be raised in a stably married home. In other words, the clear majority of Americans who marry today are managing to make it. And it's not just that they are stably married, but they're happily married. Today, 62% of husbands and wives report that they're very happy in their marriages. And an extra 34% say that they're pretty happy in their marriages. Now, of course, most couples have ups and downs, days, weeks, months, and even years when marriage and life can be tough. But on average, most of the time, American husbands and wives report that they're happily married. In my book, I identify four groups of Americans who I call masters of marriage: Asian, religious, college-educated, and conservative Americans who are especially likely to be forging strong, stable, and happy marriages today. Now, to be clear, when it comes to marital stability, Asian Americans, religious Americans, and college-educated Americans are particularly likely to lead out, to have unusually stable marriages. And when it comes to marital happiness, religious Americans, college-educated Americans, and conservative Americans tend to top the charts when it comes to marital quality. So what this suggests then is that marriage is an especially good bet for these groups. And I explain why their masters of marriage in the book. My fourth insight is defy the elites, forge a strong family. So one reason that today's masters of marriages are more likely to succeed at marriage is that they reject many of the messages coming from the elites who control the commanding heights of our culture. Too often today, journalists, professors, educators, Hollywood types, and other professionals stress a kind of me-first approach to love and marriage that privileges autonomy and freedom and self-interest in relationships. Articles in mainstream publications celebrate extramarital sexual choices. Financial gurus talk up separate checking accounts. And celebrated therapists encourage men and women to prioritize number one in their marriages. But this me-first approach to marriage is a dead end in the real world. That's because couples who adapt a we-before-me approach to marriage and embrace time-tested virtues like commitment and fidelity are much more likely to be flourishing in their marriages. The data tell us, for instance, that couples who hold on to the classic ideal that infidelity is always wrong, who share their money in joint checking accounts, and to embrace an ethic of marital generosity are markedly happier in their marriages. They also seem less likely to land in divorce court. So, to paraphrase the subtitle of my book, defy the elites and forge a strong family by taking a we before me approach to marriage and family life. My fifth insight is for the sake of the kids and the country. Isn't divorce less of a big deal for kids these days? This was a question from a colleague's wife during a break from an academic conference that I attended recently. After all, she added, were more accepting now of all sorts of families. So her theory was this: because kids in non-traditional families are less likely to feel ostracized or stigmatized nowadays, they're also less likely to be harmed by family breakdown than they would have been a half century ago. This view is increasingly common. Many people, many Americans, think that marriage and a stable family are less important for children and adults in the contemporary world than they once were. But this view could not be more wrong. In fact, for many outcomes, the advantages associated with being raised in an intact family have actually grown in recent years. We're seeing the connection between family structure and school suspensions, as well as college graduation, for instance, growing tighter in recent years. More generally, kids raised in intact married families are more likely to be flourishing financially, socially, and emotionally. Probably the most striking finding regarding kids in my book is that young men raised in any kind of non-intact family, from a single-parent family to a step-family, are more likely to have spent time in jail or in prison than to have graduated from college. And by contrast, young men who grew up with their own married parents are much, much more likely to have graduated from college than to have spent any time in jail or prison. So when you look at poor kids' odds of realizing the American dream, you know, going from rags to riches over the course of their lives, you also find that the number one factor predicting this kind of mobility at the community level is the share of two-parent families in any given community. That's why, for instance, Salt Lake City has much more mobility for poor kids than a community like Charlotte, North Carolina. And this is one of the findings that tells us that strong and stable families matter not just for individual kids, but for communities at large and for the country as a whole. Now, to be sure, many kids raised outside of an intact married home turn out just fine. I was raised by a single mom, and I think I'm doing fine. But as a sociologist, I can tell you that on average, kids in communities are more likely to thrive when they are rooted in strong married families. And that's why, if you wish to save civilization, you should care about the health of our most important social institution, marriage. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Brad. That was five big ideas from Get Married: Why Americans Must Defy the Elites, Forge Strong Families, and Save Civilization by Brad Wilcox. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.